is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Corey Harris from the Beijing Royal Fighters CBA team, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast. Let's get into it.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable, it's all cloud-based, and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit quickcut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are jumping on to talk some NBA. We're going to talk some Cavs again.
What? Cavs?
It's exciting to be able to talk Cavs in a positive manner.
We don't even have to talk, like, it's not because of LeBron, Mike. This is the first time in our podcast history that the Cavs are just leading off our show every single week. And it's not even related to LeBron. It's great.
And it's not looking forward to what's going to happen 10 years from now when we get some really great draft pick. It's what's happening now. So I'm, once again, looking forward to our Cavs segment. But let's start with our tradition. Go ahead.
All right, here we go. And I've started to think, Mike, that I've got to do a better job writing down every single week who I say, because I don't want to reuse anyone. And I'm second guessing one of these guys. So this might give you. I'm gonna give you the one I'm second guessing on, and you might.
It's gonna make me look really dumb when I don't know him for a second.
But
time.
I don't know if I don't feel like I don't know. I don't.
All right. Well, let's see. Let's see what you got.
Maybe I shouldn't just write all these names down on my Roth IRA papers like I've been doing, Mike. Good use of my paper. Anyways,
that is
Amir Coffey. Have we used Amir Coffey before?
We have not used Amir Coffey.
Okay. All right, good. He started 8 games for this team.
Amir Coffey. Started how many games?
8.
8 games, Amir Coffey. Amir Coffey. Let's see. Let me just look through my list of teams.
He's the one I've heard of out of the two. So.
Okay, that's not good. That's not a good sign because I have not heard of Amir Coffey. I'm going to say, let's see, Amir Coffey. Amir Coffey. He started 8 games for this team. Amir Coffey.
Do you want to know a position for him?
No, I really don't care. Amir Coffey. That sounds like I don't associate him. I've gone through every team now, and I don't associate him with any team. So that means, let's see, I'm going to say that since his last name is Coffey, and we associate Seattle with Coffey, and Seattle doesn't have a team, I'm going to go with the team that's closest to Seattle. I'm going to go with the Portland Trailblazers for Amir Coffey.
You're on the right coast. You're on the right coast. And Sacramento? You're getting warmer.
Warmer. I'm moving down the coast. All right. Then I'm going to say Amir Coffey. He has to be with the Clippers.
He is with the Clippers. There you go.
All right. Guard forward. Nice job, Amir.
All right.
I never heard of him.
Well, I've never heard of this guy. For a year. He played for Syracuse.
Okay. Pearl Washington.
One start. Elijah Ronnie Hughes. Suckley? Elijah Hughes.
Elijah Hughes from Syracuse. He started one game.
One game. He started one game. He's played in, I think, 11 or 12.
I think he's a Washington Wizard.
No, you are in the wrong conference.
See, I thought maybe he was somehow related to our former guest Larry Hughes, so that's why I went with the Wizards. I always have to have some kind of connection. I'll say he starts for the San Antonio Spurs.
No, they're a team that is a team we recently beat. This team we also recently beat. It was, in my opinion, a better victory than the San Antonio Spurs.
The Oklahoma City Thunder?
Nope. Before that.
The Utah Jazz.
The Utah Jazz. There you go.
All right. We might get another start with Donovan Mitchell out in concussion protocol.
Yeah, for sure. So
these back end of the roster quizzes are getting more and more.
I'm thinking that I'm gonna come up with a different question, like two different trivia questions instead of doing these roster ones starting next week. Right. So
that sounds like a good plan.
That sounds like a good plan because I'd at least heard of Amir Coffey, and it's probably because I played 2K, but I'd never heard of Elijah Hughes, and I didn't expect you to know who Elijah Hughes.
What about Billy Goodwin?
Hey, he played really well last night. Yesterday.
Billy's getting it done.
Yeah.
Sorry,
okay.
Brandon. I'll never be able to call you Brandon. You're always going to be Billy Goodwin for me.
All right. Anyways. All right. So I guess we'll transition right into it. The Cleveland Cavaliers. They end up on their road trip 5-1. I seem to recall you and I saying if they went 4-2, we'd be really happy. If we went 3-3 on the road trip, we wouldn't be too upset. Okay. Because we figured there was a few back-to-backs in there. It was 5 games in 8 days or something like that, or 6 games in 9 days, something like ridiculous. And here we are, a week removed our last podcast. Not only did we go 5-1, but we beat the Brooklyn Nets, who, yes, they were missing Kevin Durant, but they still had in my opinion, even though he's a clown, he was clearly the best player on the floor yesterday, Kyrie, in his 5th game. I was amazed that he was playing as well as he's played, considering he's only played 5 games and hasn't really had an opportunity to practice much with them. He's just so good. And by the way, Mike, I know that you and I have clowned on him, but these Cleveland fans that were booing him last night, like, I'm not all about that. Listen,
that's completely unnecessary.
He hit the biggest, arguably the biggest shot in our franchise's history, and people booing him and heckling him last night. Like, I can get like heckling him a little bit, but you booing him when he gets announced, that's uncalled for. That's absolutely uncalled for. I'm disappointed in the Cleveland Cavaliers fans for that. That's truly uncalled for. I understand he didn't leave in the best circumstances, but he made the biggest shot in Cavs history. Agree or disagree, Mike?
You can't boo him after what he did in 2016. There's just no way that you can boo the guy. And you and I have had some critical things to say about him just in terms of the way he's handled himself since he's left Cleveland. But the fact of the matter remains that here in the city of Cleveland, he should be a guy that is revered by the fans, and at least to the point where you're not going to boo him. I can understand, I guess, why people, and you and I, as I said, have been critical of him, but to boo him at a game, I just don't think that's necessary for Cleveland fans. To me, that's, it seems ridiculous when the guy, as you said, hit the biggest shot in the history of the franchise and basically won game 7 of the 2016 finals with that shot. So yeah, I don't think he deserved to be booed.
Yeah.
You can question a lot of the things he's done, but I don't think you need to boo him. Have a conversation about it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So anyways, the Cavs 6-1 over their last 7. Just unbelievable. Somehow they lucked, I mean, I don't want to say lucked out, but I will say the schedule gods have really been in our favor this year. We're playing the Bulls tomorrow night and their best player is out, LaVine. He's got a knee injury. So, Mike, I dare ask you this question.
Okay.
You know, is there a chance? And I sent you the tweet, and you did not respond to my sending of the Bill Simmons tweet yesterday. I was very disappointed in the lack of a response.
I guess I played it out in my head rather than responding.
Is there any chance? I'm not even gonna go for what he was suggesting. Is there any chance the Cavs at the end of the regular season could be a top 3 seed at this point?
I mean, I think you have to say yes, even though...
That's the answer I wanted to hear, Mike.
Even though I don't think it's very likely. And let me just say, so let's go through the reasons why it could happen and the reasons why I don't think it will happen. So first of all, let's go with the why I don't think it will happen. I think this team is really good. And all of the metrics, I saw something today on Twitter that just listed out all the things that in the Eastern Conference the Cavs were first in, and it included defensive rating and opponent field goal percentage.
Do you know who that tweet was from, Mike?
No, was it from you?
No. I was just trying to see if I could find it. I was interested in reading it, but go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, there was a list of like 10 things that the Cavs were number one in the Eastern Conference. And so this team at this point, there's no possible way that this team can be fluky. When we're this far into the season and there's so many metrics that point to this team being for real, I don't think that there's any way you can discount what they've done to this point. And yet, I feel like, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong or if your opinion is different, but I really think that this team is one injury away from slipping back to where they're a 500 team. And that injury could be to any one of three players. I feel like if you lose Mobley, you lose Jared Allen, or you lose Garland, that you're going to be in a heap of trouble. And those guys are just irreplaceable. I don't feel like the depth on this team's roster would allow them to be able to handle the loss of any one of those three guys. Now, look, you can say the same thing for any of the teams at the top, maybe with the exception of Miami, because Miami's weathered the storm with Bam being out, and he's now back, and Jimmy Butler was out for a long time, and he's now back, and Miami's still hanging around the top of the top of the East. The Bulls, since LaVine went down, they've now lost 4 in a row, kind of coming back to earth. Brooklyn has had various guys out, but when you have 3 of the arguably top 10 players in the league, 15 players in the league, depending on where you want to rank the current version of James Harden and the half-available Kyrie Irving, you certainly have 3 guys who have top 10 talent in the league, so that better enables them to be able to weather that storm. I just think that the Cavs are one injury to one of those 3 guys away from struggling, okay, which they have done every single time. Every time one or more of those guys have been unavailable, the team has not looked nearly as good. And now that can be said for a lot of other teams, but I just think the Cavs, those 3 guys are so important to what they do and to what their identity is, that I just don't think any one of those 3 guys are replaceable. And we could talk about what each one of them do and why they're so important to the team, but just what's your thought?
I tend to agree with what you're saying, but at the same time, like, I think they still could have a chance now to get the top three seed. I think that's out the window for sure. I agree with that. But I don't think they'd be 500, Mike. I think they would be above 500. I think, I mean, I'm not saying like 10 games over 500, but like I think they could be 4 or 5 games over 500 and maintain. Now, if it's like a season-ending injury, then yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think they're still, Mike, I think I'm at the point. Okay, so let's just put this out there. The Cavs have 27 wins. ESPN forecasted them to win 26 games.
26 and a half, right? 26.
538 had 25. Caesars had 26 and a half. Okay? Those were win projections. All right?
I read today, too, where they are the fifth fastest team ever to surpass their over-under win total from the beginning of the season. And I have no idea who the top four are, but the Cavs were fifth. Which guy do you think they could least afford to lose of the three?
Oof, that's tough. I think Garland because of the offensive situation. Like, I think when he and Rubio were out those few games, you could definitely see the offense was disjointed, and he just initiates everything on the offensive end. I think, like, you could make the argument, I think Mobley's probably – man, it's hard between Mobley and Allen for the defensive end of the arm, but I think Mobley's probably the second, and it's primarily because when I don't know what I read this on or what I saw, but like they were talking about his metrics when he's switching out and guarding on perimeter threes, like when most 7-footers switch out, like the percentage of times the players shoot threes versus not, and like he was number one in the league because no one feels comfortable with him because he can actually if he does over pursue. He can actually recover, so he feels comfortable enough to attack and close out on threes, whereas most 7-footers are giving space. I don't remember where I read that metric, but he was number one in the league, and I think probably him over Allen, although Allen's been pretty good when he's guarding on the perimeter too. But I have to go with Garland because of the offense. I just think the offense is so disjointed. I think defensively, you know, he's maybe he's a flat defender. He probably is a minus defender, quite frankly. And I think he's all right. But the other two, I just think the offense, they're important, but Garland's the most important.
I agree. I think Garland has to be number one. I think this team, without Garland, I think it's a struggle because he just does so many things. He sets up Allen and Mobley so well with the lobs, and he just provides the off-the-dribble bounce and creativity that nobody else on this roster has. Because the Cavs are short on wings and wing talent, without Garland's ability to create for himself and for others, I just think that this team would be in a lot of trouble if Garland goes down for any length of time, which we saw when he was out in the protocols that the Cavs struggled during that time. That was when they lost 4 out of 5 and really didn't look like the same team. And then as far as Mobley and Allen, you could go back and forth probably a million times and split hairs and not come up with the right answer. But I think I agree with you that I think Mobley is probably second simply because of his ability to, as you said, step out on the floor and defend. Now, Allen has become a really, really good post player. When the ball goes inside to him, I expect him almost every time to score, whereas Mobley is still, I think, pretty dependent upon somebody else to get him the ball in situations where he can score. Now, he still is a very good scorer, if you want to call it that, where he'll catch the ball and he'll be able to make a little floater from 12 feet away when he catches it, and he can shoot jump shots. But when he tries to put the ball on the floor, his handle's not quite tight enough to be able to allow him to get past people in space, and then he's also not strong enough yet to back guys down. You can see what he's trying to accomplish sometimes, but he'll get the ball poked away from him, or a guy will just stonewall him and he won't be able to move him down into the lane. But I just think what he provides in terms of his versatility, I think he's just slightly more versatile than Jared Allen on the defensive end of the floor. Allen's a better rebounder. Mobley, I think, is a better, although Allen does a really good job defending the rim as well, but I think Mobley's just a little bit better defensively. And so let's put it this way. I think you'd be much more well-equipped to deal with the absence of either Allen or Mobley because one could effectively replace the other. Whereas Garland, there's just nobody on this roster that can do the things that Garland does,
Mike,
for this team.
Let me tell you this. During the Cavaliers' win streak, Darius Garland has scored or assisted on nearly 50% of their points. 48.7%. That's pretty important, right? I liked his comment after the game. Did you see what he said after the game? Because he was named Eastern Conference Player of the Week. Okay.
Yep.
That's cool. I'm glad we got the win, though.
Well, what's fun about this team, and it's so different from the second version, at least, of the LeBron teams. Early LeBron, you probably had some of this same stuff, but the second iteration of the LeBron Cavaliers, you didn't have any of this, where these guys are so young that they're at this point just
they
happen
kinda
to be...
Me, Mike, they kind of remind me of the 2007 Cavs without LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, they're now, like, they're a fun team. Clearly, they enjoy playing together. Clearly, they don't really... No one has an ego. You don't get the sense that any guy is complaining about their touches or they're this or they're that. Like, there's none of that. Whenever you watch or hear or listen to these guys, they just seem like a group that enjoys playing with one another and is having fun with the success that I don't think anybody really saw coming. And Garland has been a big, big part of that. And look, I spent a lot of time his rookie year bashing him and just saying how I didn't see what this guy does well, because the passing is the part to me that's been a revelation.
The 18 assists was crazy, man.
Yeah, I never, ever in a million years, if you would have told me that Darius Garland was going to be one of the better passers in the NBA at some point in his career, I would have told you there is no way. I'm not seeing any of that when he was a rookie. And he's just progressively gotten better and better and better. And what he's doing at this point, we talked, 2 weeks ago maybe, and we said if the Cavs are going to get one all-star, it seemed more likely at that point that it was going to be Jared Allen. Now, I have a hard time seeing how you have an all-star game in Cleveland without Darius Garland on it. It just, he's sixth in the league in assists. He's averaging, I was surprised he's not averaging 20 a game. He's only averaging 19.7. I was stunned. I thought he was definitely be over 20 at this point, but he's going to get there.
That one assist he had, Mike, where he caught the ball with one hand and immediately threw it. You know which one I'm talking about?
Yes.
That was crazy. I mean, that was absolutely nuts. Actually, now that I think about it, didn't the guy get fouled and not make the layup?
Yes.
And then Mobley dunked it. They didn't call the foul or something along those lines. Or Allen got, yeah. But that was a crazy pass. And I don't know.
Garland's the best. I think you have him, Trae Young, and Harden are the three best lob passers in the league at this point. Garland is so good at getting in the lane, disguising whether he's going to shoot the floater, which we hated when he was a rookie. And now that floater has become his biggest weapon because he gets in the lane and the defense has no idea whether he's going to shoot it or whether he's going to throw the lob. And then Jared Allen and Mobley are so long. Those two guys are so long. Their arms are so long. They're so tall. It's just when Mobley gets the ball underneath and he goes up to dunk when he's just like flat-footed. He just dunks so easily. And those guys are so long, and they have such great timing and touch with Garland. This team's just they're just fun to watch. And what they've been able to do, I don't remember even a LeBron team going 5-1. On a West Coast road trip, especially with two back-to-backs. And then the game that they did lose, I know you talked about how the schedule gods have kind of been with the Cavs, but you get the only loss on that road trip is to Clay and the Warriors on Clay's first game back. So that game...
They hung with them like that.
That one you penciled in for sure as just a loss, not only because the Warriors are good, but just because of the whole circumstance around Clay's return. Yeah. But then for them to win 5 out of 6 on that road trip, and the only one they lose is Clay's return at Golden State, kudos to the Cavs for pulling that off. And then the Brooklyn win coming back home, where you only had one day of rest after traveling and coming off the road for however long they were gone.
Six games in nine days.
Beating Brooklyn, regardless of the fact that they didn't have Kevin Durant, Big win.
Mike, did you see they moved one of our games to ESPN?
I did see that. It's funny when you look at their schedule on, I'm always on the ESPN roster slash schedule slash standings website. And when you look through the Cavs schedule and you don't see any national TV games, but you see the one, you see one lonely ESPN now. So
March 6th got moved.
There it is.
Toronto.
It
is. All right. So Mike, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, going back to the whether they're going to be, can they get a top three seed? And then we kind of got off track and went into a million different directions. But I guess the bottom line for me is I think some of the other teams in the East have a better opportunity to withstand another stretch of COVID if that afflicts any of the teams. And I think they have a better ability to withstand injury. I think if all the teams remain healthy, can the Cavaliers maintain and get a top three seed? I'm not saying it's completely out of the question. I think they could. I still think that when push comes to shove, despite what all the metrics say, I still think that we're probably, although I don't know, are the Bulls really better than the Cavs?
No.
Even at full strength, I'm not sure. Like Brooklyn at full strength is clearly better than the Cavs. A full-strength Brooklyn Nets team, the Cavaliers have no chance of beating them. A full-strength
Milwaukee Bucks team.
Right. Cavs have no chance of beating those, two teams.
I think we could beat anyone else, Mike.
I agree. I think Miami...
As you would like to say, I'm dubious on Miami.
I'm dubious of Miami, too. But what they've been able to do without Bam and without Jimmy for a good stretch, I think they're developing some role guys that maybe they wouldn't have had to play had those guys remained healthy that may end up helping them down the road. But I think that Milwaukee and Brooklyn, as we said going into the season, those two teams to me are in a tier by themselves. And then I think you have the Bulls, Heat, Sixers, and surprisingly, the Cavs are the next spots. And I think you could probably go any direction with those seeds, whatever, yeah. three through six. Depending on how things go. And Embiid's been fantastic for the Sixers
and they're
over
still,
the last couple of weeks.
And they're still struggling at times.
Yeah, but Philly just doesn't have – they don't have enough. Without – when you have a max player who's sitting out and you're getting nothing from Ben Simmons and you're not trading Ben Simmons for other things that are useful, there's – the fact that Philly's doing as well as they are is a testament to how good Embiid is, because the rest of their roster as it's constituted right now – You can't be impressed with Philly's roster construction at this point, and B has kind of been carrying them. So I expect the Cavs to be right in there. I don't think they're going to.
Mike, I just want to float this out there.
Okay.
April 10th.
Okay.
Last game of the season.
Okay.
At home against the Milwaukee Bucks. What if that game was for the division?
Well,
think about that.
It could be, I guess. It could be.
That game right there.
The funny part of it is that if you look at the Cavs roster, I think when you talk about how you're going to stop Milwaukee, right? You have to. It starts and ends with how do you guard Giannis. Now Mobley probably isn't quite strong enough yet, but
man, throw him for a few possessions,
right? And man, he's good enough to move, and maybe Jared Allen's not quick enough to guard him in the perimeter, but he's at least got size and he's got the ability to block shots. I know Markkanen is not a great defender, but Markkanen is 7 feet tall and he's strong and he's not a great defender, but he's another guy with length and size that you could throw at him. So when you start talking about some of these other teams that are like, how do we match up? How do we stop Giannis? The Cavs kind of have some, not answers, again, because I don't think there's any answers for a guy who scored 50 points in Game 7 of the Finals.
Yeah.
The Cavs at least can throw some different kinds of bodies at him as you look at it. I think the Cavs have, they're just, because they have, Mobley just unlocks so many things for this team because he just allows you to play in lots of different ways with lots of different lineups. And that's the only reason why they can go with that big, giant lineup is because of Mobley's ability to step out on the perimeter and, as you mentioned earlier, to be able to have an effect on guys in the perimeter, what kind of shots they're taking and what kind of looks they're able to get against them. And they're just not able to get good looks. That's just the bottom line.
Yep. All right. So let's make our predictions. But I, after that, I want to just float something out there really quickly for you. So, okay. So Wednesday, tomorrow they play Chicago. I think that's a win.
I think it's a win.
Okay. Saturday, we're home against Oklahoma City. That's a win.
That's a win.
And then Monday, we're home against the Knicks.
That's a win.
Okay. Oh, so we're setting them up for 3-0. Okay. So hopefully we're right. Okay. So then after that, we play a game next Wednesday. It's going to be a big game. We're playing Milwaukee at home. Okay. I'm just floating this out there. I want to read you the next 12 opponents we have play after that. I know that's stretching through the month of February, but you got to hear this, the schedule we have. February, if we don't go 9-1, we play 10 games in February. If we don't go 9-1 in February, the schedule, Mike. So to end January, we go Detroit, New Orleans. Then this is our month of February. You ready?
I'm ready.
Houston, Charlotte, Indiana, Spurs, Indiana, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Detroit, Washington, Minnesota. That should at least be 7-3.
So the games there that you could theoretically justify losing are at Charlotte. Charlotte's been playing better, so that's an away game. At Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Atlanta, we've struggled with for whatever reason, so I could see that game, but that's it.
We've already beaten them this year, though, at Atlanta, right?
Right. So we're 1-1, I think, right?
We played three games against them, we lost to them at home and we beat them at Atlanta, I feel like. I could be wrong in that statement, but are you checking the research?
I'm looking at it right now. We beat Atlanta at home. We had one game with Atlanta postponed.
Oh.
And we lost to Atlanta at home. So we've played Atlanta twice at home and we've split with them.
Okay, so is this the makeup game or is this I don't know, did they reschedule those games? I don't even know.
That's a good question.
My ignorance.
I'm looking at it. I don't see anything listed as
sweet
makeup. So
how many games have we played so far, Mike? We are
27-18.
I'm just counting how many we're getting through. Well, we've got 36 games on the schedule. We're what?
27-18.
Yeah, so they haven't put those games that were postponed yet. So I guess we play them four times this year. So I don't know what they're going to do at the end of the season, how they're going to make those games up. Because there's definitely I don't know.
Well, let's put it this way. That should be a good run for the Cavs. The next, whatever, 12 to 14 games – the Cavs should continue to put up a good record if they remain healthy.
And that's important to front load them because the month of March and April aren't going to be very as nice. So that's all we're going to say on that. Okay, we've spent half an hour talking Cavs, Mike. I know we jumped around a little bit, but we kind of already touched on the injuries in the league. We got the Durant injury. We got the LaVine injury. We've got Donovan Mitchell went out with a concussion. Now, what was interesting is they didn't label it as a concussion because I feel like he played after he got hit. Is that accurate? Am I inaccurate in that statement?
Because it says he began experiencing symptoms after the game against the Lakers. So he got hit before halftime and then started to feel it after the game. And now he's been put into concussion protocol. So who knows? If kind of scary in a little bit of a way that it was delayed and maybe he'll end up being in the protocols longer than we think. Utah's struggling a little bit. They're 4-6 in their last 10. And
they ran into the Monster Cavs. That's why.
Well, they just haven't played. They haven't played as well. They have not
And they had a bunch of people in COVID protocol too. So that hurts. And then Paul George's UCL, he's going to be out a few more weeks. They're letting him rest more.
What does that mean for the Clippers season? Are the Clippers?
Is it a punt? Are they punt? I mean, they're still hanging around a little bit. Like
they're in the nine spot. I think if you have Paul George and you have Kawhi, come playoff time, then you're not punting on the season. But if this Paul George elbow UCL continues to linger and he can't get back or he's not going to be 100%. It seems then unlikely that you would bring Kawhi back to a Paul George-less Clippers team who is in the play-in and think that one guy is going to lead you to an NBA title. You probably just punt the season at that point and just bring those two guys back, hopefully healthy, starting next season, I would have to think.
Mike, did you see the other guy that got injured? Your boy.
Well, who's my boy?
Bull Bull. He's having surgery on his foot and will be sidelined for 8 to 12 weeks. That's why the trade got voided.
Do you think that does anybody in Denver even talk to him? Like, how do they not know he has, what is it, a fractured foot?
No, it just says Denver Nuggets forward Bull Bull has decided to undergo surgery on his foot and will be sidelined for 8 to 12 weeks. Bull's trade.
He just decided on his own, man. Mike Malone didn't talk to him. Doesn't seem like anybody there really knows what's going on. They're like, oh, we're going to trade this guy, but little do we know that he needs foot surgery. Whatever has gone wrong there for Bull Bull in Denver has gone completely wrong. Let's just put it that way.
He's your boy, man.
I was excited to see him somewhere else. I think he has talent.
Hey, but your Magruder trade is back up available now.
That's right. That's right.
It's a throwback.
Yeah, we can throw Rodney Magruder back in. Nice. I like it.
Just thought that. And then Miles Turner is out for another 2 weeks due to a stress reaction in his left foot.
Whatever that stinks for the Pacers, man.
Well, that means is he's out past there's talking that he could possibly be out past the trade deadline. So, like, that's the asking, you know, he's been the center of all Indiana Pacers trade talk and now he's injured. So, like, teams can't feel good about that. The Pacers definitely can't feel good because whatever they were going to ask for has definitely gone down significantly now.
It's just tough to trade a guy who's injured when you can put whatever timetable you want on it. But if the guy's not playing, he's not playing. And clearly anybody who's trading for Miles Turner is trading for him with the idea of bolstering their roster to try to make a run for either the title or at least make a deep postseason run. So if he's out and injured when we get to the trade deadline, I would think that either there's going to be no market for him because he's hurt, or what Indiana, as you said, what Indiana can get for him would seem to be compromised, which maybe doesn't make a lot of sense because if he's coming back 2 weeks after the trade deadline, those 2 weeks in the long term probably shouldn't matter. But if you're a team that's going to give up some real assets to try to bring in Miles Turner, you'd probably hesitate a little bit more with the fact that, hey, this guy's not on the court and we don't know exactly when he is going to be on the court. And clearly, just like the Bull Bull trade, you'd have some medical, you'd have to pass a physical and they'd take a look at his foot and see where it is. But still, it's just one more complication that makes it more difficult for Indiana to deal Miles Turner. And who knows? Does Indiana, they're a team that traditionally has never wanted to bottom out. Their owner doesn't want to do it that way. I read a quote from him the other day just saying that that's not the way we want to conduct business. We always want to try to be winning and playing winning basketball. And so if you're going to trade Turner, obviously you want to get back some pieces, whether it's draft picks or something that can help you in the short term. Becomes a lot more difficult when he's hurt. Let's put it that way.
Yep. All right. Did you see the trade rumor today? The attempted trade for Ben Simmons. The Pistons made an offer for Ben Simmons. Jeremy Grant, Sadiq Bey, Kelly Olynyk, and a first-round pick. The 76ers were not excited by the offer, according to reports.
Say those names again.
Jeremy Grant, Sadiq Bey, Kelly Olynyk, and a first-round pick. I don't know.
Is that a Detroit first-round pick, I wonder?
Detroit first-round pick to the 76ers.
Okay, so if that's actually a Detroit pick and not a pick that they acquired from another team, and depending on what year it is, that pick's pretty valuable if it is due this year or
I would guess next it wouldn't year. Have been this year's pick. I don't know.
You wouldn't think so. That pick would have to be lottery protected by the Pistons unless they're really, really stupid. I think,
that sounds like a pretty good deal in my opinion, but I don't know.
A pretty good deal for both teams?
I think it's...
Or you like it for Philly?
I mean, I like it for Philly. I don't necessarily know because you don't know what you're getting with Ben Simmons. Is Ben Simmons going to want to play in Detroit?
Detroit seems like a place that if there were going to be player... If there was going to be a place that people didn't want to play, Detroit would probably be on that list of places
I feel
where
like, I feel like Ben NBA Simmons would have a lot of, I feel like Ben Simmons would have a lot of malice if he went there. You see what I did there?
I did. Malice in the Palace. I like it. Yeah. Well, look, so if you're Philly, you're turning a roster spot that's giving you nothing into Jeremy Grant, who's a good but not great player. Sadiq Bey, who's a young player who probably fits that same profile. And Kelly Olynyk, who's a veteran, who's played in playoff games, who you could throw out there and you know he's going to be competent in the things that he does. Is Kelly Olynyk going to win you a playoff series? No, but could Kelly Olynyk play key minutes and help you? He probably can. I think it still comes back to what is the true market value for Ben Simmons and how wildly different are the opinions of front offices around the NBA? Are there still teams and executives that look at him and say, he's an all NBA player, he's first team all defense, he's a guy who, if we get him out of that situation in Philly, he can return at least back to what he was before. And if we get him in our building, we can turn him around and maybe get him to be able to shoot a little bit, maybe do some things, add to his game pieces that were missing in Philadelphia. Are there organizations that feel that way? And then conversely, how many organizations are there out there that feel like this guy is damaged goods? He has whatever mental block he has with the free throw line. And because of that, then he doesn't want to go to the basket. He doesn't want to get fouled, which limits his effectiveness. And can this guy ever get back to that level? And then the other piece of this whole thing is, depending upon what the outcome is, if you trade for Ben Simmons, do you get, if the sliding scale is he's an all NBA player who improves and gets better from what he was before, if that's the ceiling, the floor is a guy who could end up being a very challenging player to build around because he just never gets over whatever mental blocks have been created at this point. And not only do you have a guy who's no longer an effective player or a superstar, but you're paying him for, I believe, 3, maybe even 4 more seasons at max contract level. So if you trade for him and he doesn't get close to what his ceiling is as a player, if he comes closer to the floor of what he is, man, that contract becomes an albatross really, really, really quickly. And you got to pay a lot of money out to Ben Simmons. And how do you build your team around him?
Yeah, I mean, that trade offer, the Sadiq Bey, Jeremy Grant, Kelly Olynyk in a first round pick, is there any way Daryl Morey's getting more than that for him? I just don't see it at this point, right? Like, who's giving more than that?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe you get a player that theoretically is better or has a higher upside than one of those guys. So let's say you go to Sacramento. Could theoretically De'Aaron Fox in the right situation be better than Jeremy Grant or Sadiq Bey? I would argue yes, even though Fox has been down this year. Sacramento is still a messed up situation. If you trade for Haliburton, he's probably got a lower upside than Fox. I don't think he's as talented, but he might be a steadier presence for your team. He might be a better fit in Philadelphia because he's a little bit better shooter. But yeah, when you look up and down the league and you say, okay, who are the teams that would be willing to trade somebody that fits Philly's and Daryl Morey's vision of getting back a top 30 star, those guys just don't – I just don't know who the trade would be for. What team is out there that has one of those guys that would be willing to give that player up in order to get Simmons? So obviously the big talk that Philly – the guy that Philly really wanted is Dame Lillard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Lillard is now out for
– 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay, so I mean he's effectively done for the season, you would have to guess.
Yeah.
Now maybe I guess if you trade him to Philly and he recovers and he comes back and he knows that I'm playing down the stretch and playing with Embiid, I got a chance to maybe make a deep playoff run in the East, maybe he comes back. But is Philly going to trade for a guy who to be honest, hasn't been effective, was terrible in the Olympics, had what was for him a subpar first third of the season before he gets hurt. Is that the guy Philly wants to trade and bring in? And plus, you're going to probably have to sign him. I don't know how – I think Dame has like 2 years left in his contract, but he could sign an extension. So you're really going to sign Dame Lillard, who's currently injured, to what essentially might be a four – you're going to sign up for 4 more years of Lillard at probably close to $50 million a year. I don't think – I wouldn't be excited to do that if I was Philly. Who's out there? Who's out there that you could trade for that would make sense for the Sixers? I'm looking at the Western Conference. I heard Zion floated out there.
Oh, who's the bigger head case?
But that's why it might make sense, right? New Orleans might look at it and go, this guy never got to play. We can't get to him.
Oh, man, do you send Zion to Philly? Oh, boy, he's going to be eating those cheesesteaks. And I'm just saying, I don't know, Mike.
Zion and Embiid would be fun, wouldn't it?
Well, theoretically. Theoretically, Rodney Hood making an appearance. But I don't know.
So maybe New Orleans cuts bait on Zion and you bring in Simmons and go from there. You reunite the number one and number two picks in the, 2016 draft? Simmons and Ingram are now your dynamic duo in New Orleans. At least Simmons is going to be on the floor.
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think New Orleans is going to trade Zion, but at least theoretically, it could make sense for both teams. Continuing through the Western Conference, I think Minnesota. Could Minnesota trade? You ready to cut bait on Cat? Even though he's been really good this year offensively, he's probably going to make an all-star team. You're not trading Anthony Edwards if you're Minnesota. And if I'm Philly, I don't want D'Angelo Russell. So there's nothing there. Denver has nothing to trade. Dallas has nothing to trade. Utah's not trading Donovan Mitchell, so there's nothing there. Memphis might be able to put together a Detroit-type package that you described. So maybe they have to give up Desmond Bane. But does...
I wouldn't mess up with what I've got going on in Memphis.
Yeah, do you want Simmons? Morant's going to have the ball in Memphis, so you don't want Simmons handling the ball, pushing in transition, because you already have Morant doing that same thing. Golden State has been talked about. They have all those young guys that aren't really playing a whole lot. But that doesn't help Philly. Philly's trying to win a title. Philly's trying to maximize what they have right now today. Golden State could maybe give them stuff that could help in the future. Doesn't really help Philly to win this year. Phoenix is not making any kind of deal. So that's the West. In the East, Orlando has nothing Philly would want. Detroit, we already went over. Indiana, neither of the big guys from Indiana make sense next to Embiid in my mind. Atlanta's got a bunch of guys, but they already did the Cam Reddish deal, so seems unlikely that whatever they could put together. The Knicks have nothing. Celtics, I can't see trading either Tatum or Brown for Simmons in any way, shape, or form, unless Philly would throw in a bunch of stuff that they're not going
Mike,
to.
Mike, we got a breaking news. Woj bomb.
Okay.
Woj bomb.
What is it?
Denver,
is it?
Boston, and San Antonio are making a 3-way trade. Juancho Hernan Gomez to the Spurs. Bryn Forbes to Denver. Bol Bol, it is a surgically repaired foot. And PJ Dozier to the Celtics.
Free Bol Bol.
Yeah,
I like it.
I think Denver's the winner in that trade, right?
Bryn Forbes?
Yeah.
Yeah, he helps them.
But that was a breaking Adrian Wojnarowski treat.
All right,
came out 12 minutes ago. Sorry,
Nice.
We were talking about trades, so I thought it was good.
That's good.
And so, there have been rumors that Denver was after Bryn Forbes. I heard that. I want to say yesterday or the day before, I read an article about how Denver was in talks to get Bryn Forbes or were considering trying to go after Bryn Forbes. So congrats to Denver.
Put shooters around Jokic, right?
Yep,
put shooters
around Jokic. It's got to be. I mean, and he almost single-handedly helped the Spurs beat us. I mean, like you said in our text message just during that game, you know, that was easily a game the Cavs could have lost, you know, tired road trip. And they could have lost, and they came back and won and did a good job. So they held
on. They gutted out both that Spurs and Thunder game.
Yep.
Those are games that lesser teams that are less committed could have easily lost. So continuing through the Eastern Conference, Toronto. I mean, Toronto could put together a package.
No.
No?
I mean, what? Van Vliet?
I mean, they could. They could.
Why would they want to mess with it? I just don't think they're going to buy. I think Masai, he's not going to do that.
Van Vliet for Simmons?
No. Get out of here.
If you're Philly, would you do that?
Is
Van Vliet good enough?
I mean, is he
straight up Van Vliet for Simmons?
No. No.
Who's saying no? Which side are you saying no on?
The Philly's never going for that. If they're turning down Jeremy Grant, a first-round pick, and listen, Van Vliet's better than Jeremy Grant and Sadiq Bey and Kelly Olynyk, but if they're turning down that and a first-round pick, there's no way they're taking Van Vliet straight up. Sorry. There's three players in the league that I think they would take straight up, Mike. Right?
I don't know. Look, okay, so
Giannis?
Just humor me, man. Hold on, humor me. All right, go ahead. Give me your list.
Giannis, Durant, and, I mean, I guess theoretically Kyrie if he was not a loose cannon.
You don't think they'd trade him straight up for Evan Mobley?
Okay. Yeah, probably. You're right.
They would.
But they're not going to trade Van Vliet for him. Come on now, Mike. Come on.
Fred Van Vliet. You ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, keep in mind.
Now, we got to remember, Toronto's going to want to do this. So, just keep that in mind, too.
Keep in mind. Fred Van Vliet, Joel Embiid, they have really nobody to create or do anything. Fred Van Vliet, 38 minutes a game,
okay.
43% from the field, 40% from three,
okay.
86% from the line, 5 rebounds as a 5'11 guard in the NBA. 6.7 assists, 1.7 steals.
No, Mike.
21.9 points a game.
He's got no one else on his team. Who else is on his team?
Who else is on what team?
The Toronto Raptors. He's got to do
Scotty
all that.
Scotty Barnes, Siakam. OG Anunoby.
Those guys, come on. I'm off all those trades.
Toronto's going to double down on the Giant. All their guys are between 6'8 and 6'10.
No.
Get Van Vliet out of there. Bring in Simmons. You're all set.
No. Sorry, Mike. That's not happening.
All right. Anyway, so that I'm just saying it's a possibility. The Wizards, doesn't seem like Beal is going to be dealt. I wouldn't want Beal if I was Philly anyway. I'd rather have Van Vliet.
No.
No?
No, anyway, I'd rather have Beal than Van Vliet. Sorry, Mike.
You'd rather have Beal. All right, let's go Beal's stats. Let me give you Beal's stats. Let's see how they compare. I'm just curious. So Beal's shooting 45% from the field.
Okay.
He's knocking down 29% of his threes.
Yeesh. What was Van Vliet from the field?
Van Vliet was 43% from the field, 40% from three.
Okay.
They're averaging about the same amount of rebounds, same amount of assists. Beal averages a few more turnovers, less steals. They're comparable.
I would rather have Beal than Van Vliet. Sorry.
All right. That's fine. Okay. But Washington doesn't seem like they're going to trade. Charlotte has nothing
Boston's not going to trade with Morey. So you can say
that's what I'm saying. The Cavs aren't making any trades for Ben Simmons at this point, unless you're going to give them Sexton and a draft pick, which Philly has no interest in.
Sexton, Rubio, and the draft pick?
Yeah, two guys that can't play and another theoretical asset. Brooklyn, there's lots of talk still that in the offseason that maybe Harden's going to go to Philly. So maybe you just sit on it and wait.
Why would Morey do that to himself again? Why would he do that? That doesn't make sense to me.
No, I agree with you. I guess it's maybe the devil you know. But... yeah, I would never hitch my wagon to James Harden, even in his prime, but this version of James Harden, yeah, I would not be excited. If I was Joel Embiid and they said, hey, the cavalry's coming, and the cavalry was James Harden, that would not be my idea of fun. Let's put it that way.
Yep.
And Miami, I don't think, is going to trade for him. And Chicago, I don't think, has any need for Ben Simmons. So I guess the point here is there really isn't any tailor-made superstar trade. And the teams that can give you the three players for one, is that enough to move the needle for Philly? You could argue, yes, it should be, because Simmons is at this point a zero. He's going to continue to be a zero for Philly. I don't think he ever plays again for the Sixers, even if the trading deadline passes and he hasn't been moved. So you turn him into three or four positive guys and you're all set. So that's the Ben Simmons trade. We do have a trade that took place this week. In addition to the one that you dropped right here on the podcast, thanks, Woj, we had the Cam Reddish to New York. Your quick thoughts on that one?
I mean, so there were reports that the Cavs had done some due diligence on Cam Reddish, but they didn't like what they had heard about his attitude, and they didn't want to bring him in. I mean, obviously Atlanta wanted to get rid of him. New York theoretically could use him if he comes in with a good attitude, but if he has a terrible attitude, I don't necessarily know that it's a great move. But at the same time, the Knicks are kind of treading water and they need to do something because they haven't been super impressive this year. They've had flashes of brilliance and at the same time have had not flashes of brilliance. So I think the move, I don't necessarily know it. It's probably good for Reddish and good for Atlanta. And like I said, theoretically good for New York. That's how I would phrase it.
I would say good for Reddish because it gets him out of a situation where Atlanta had a lot of wings, guys who had done more, proven more than he had, and he wasn't getting necessarily the opportunities that he felt he deserved. So I'd say it's a win for Cam Reddish. For Atlanta, you clear out a guy who was probably and clearly not happy. So you've sort of clarified where you are on the wing with Bogdanovich and Herter and now DeAndre Hunter coming back. So there really wasn't a lot of minutes for Cam Reddish, or you're going to be cutting into minutes of guys maybe you'd rather be playing because of what they bring on both ends of the floor that Reddish has only theoretically shown just because of his size and athleticism. And then if you're the Knicks, I think it's probably worth a flyer to see if Cam Reddish can be a guy that lives up to what his high school resume suggested he might become and what his theoretical physical tools show that he might be able to be capable of. But the danger to me, if you're New York, is can this guy prove himself in the last, whatever we have, half of the season here, 50 games, 45 games, whatever's left, to the point where you're going to have to give him a bigger contract. And that's the worry that I would have is, can I figure out what this guy is or who he can be in the time that I have left and evaluate him properly where I'm going to have to give him big money or I'm going to have to let him go. That's the thing is, he strikes me as a guy who is going to end up getting a contract that is worth more money than what he should get, because he's one of those players that seems like he has a tantalizing tool set and the type of body and athleticism that you can look at it and you can see it and you can say, oh, this guy, if he just figures it out, if he just puts it together, if he just can do this. And those are the guys that oftentimes end up getting overpaid. And I could see a situation in New York where Cam Reddish gets overpaid and he ends up being a guy that is no longer, he might end up being a pretty good player, but he's going to end up being a guy that people look at that at his contract and say, oh man, like we got saddled with the Cam Reddish contract.
Tristan Thompson?
Yeah, a little bit. Kind of like where Tobias Harris is with Philadelphia right now.
Oh
like
man, Tobias that's Harris, brutal.
But Tobias Harris is fine. He's fine. He's a good NBA player.
It's the contract.
But it's the contract. So the contract is what makes it so people think that Tobias Harris stinks. Tobias Harris doesn't stink. Tobias Harris just is being paid like a guy who is a number one option on a team, and he's not. He's probably on a mediocre team. He might be your third option. On a good team, he probably should be your fourth option. And unfortunately, right now in Philly, they need him to be their second option, and he's vastly overpaid to try to play that role. That's just not who he is.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
And I could see Cam Reddish end up getting in the similar position where you're like, look, this guy has talent. Potentially he could be this. We got to pay him so we don't lose him. And now you end up with a guy who maybe he's a solid NBA player, but you're paying him like a guy who's the third best player on a championship team. And that's a recipe for disaster when you start paying guys max money or close to max money who are not your best player and are not capable of leading your team or being a focal point of a team that can go deep into the playoffs. So I think it's worth a risk, but New York has to be very careful with what they do when his contract is up and what they decide to, you know, where he is in terms of his development. So that's how I would look at it.
That's a fair assessment, Mike. I think it is. And like I said, I think it's New York needed to do something for the short term because they've been kind of, like I said, treading water. But long term, I don't know how much this helps them. And like you said, do they want to sign and do a long term deal? I don't know if he's a guy that they really want, but we'll just have to see.
I guess you look at it as an extended tryout, and if it doesn't work, what'd you give up? You gave up a second-round pick, I think, and you gave up Kevin Knox, who clearly wasn't in your plans and probably isn't in Atlanta's plans either. Yeah. And if Reddish turns out to be more than what most people around the NBA seem to think that he can be, then New York wins the trade. And if he doesn't, then you just got to make sure you don't make a mistake in terms of offering a bigger contract than what he's worth. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Sounds good to me, Mike. Do you have a dad joke for me tonight?
Do I have a dad joke for you? I do. So let me think.
I've got one for you. I've got one for you. Here you go.
All right, you give it to me.
Did you hear about the red and the blue ship, Mike?
The red and the blue ship. No.
They collided in the middle of the ocean, and now both crews are marooned.
That's a good one. That's a good one. All right, so here's mine. My son came up to me and he said, Dad, it's really cold in here. I told him, hey, go stand in the corner. It's 90 degrees over there.
That's a good one. 90 degrees. I got another one for you. One more, Mike. Sorry.
Oh, man. We're just going to wrap up with a comedy bit now. I like it.
Why'd the alternate universe Spider-Man do so well on his driver test?
I don't know why.
He's an excellent parallel Parker.
I like that one. Okay, I got one more.
Okay, go ahead.
Since you had two, I go two. What's the difference between a well-dressed man on a bicycle and a poorly dressed man on a unicycle?
Oh, God. I don't know.
Attire.
That's a good one to end on, Mike. We're going to call it there.
All right. Let's wrap it up there with the comedy stylings of Mike and Jason. Thanks to everyone for checking out the Hoopheads pod tonight. We appreciate it. We know we are talking a lot of Cavs, which is fun for Jason and I. Hopefully it's fun for all of you that are out there. Cavs are one of the most interesting teams, I think, this season in the NBA, and we'll continue to talk Cavs. If you haven't checked out this week's roundtable episode, we put it out on Monday. And if you're looking for a book to read, if you're a coach and you're looking for a book to start off your year 2022, we had a lot of great recommendations on books from our coaches, so please check that out. And then coming up on Friday, we will have an episode with Gabe Miller, who is an assistant basketball coach at Loras College in the state of Iowa. So look for that coming out on Friday. And a lot of great stuff coming in the future from Hoopheads Pod, so make sure you continue to check us out. Follow us on Twitter at Hoopheads Pod. You'll get all the latest updates and everything that we have going on. And we appreciate you listening tonight, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.